Founder 101 podcast. This is Swanik Jaikumar. And, as you know, in this podcast series, we try to examine different professions and career paths by talking to experts in those fields. If you're new to this podcast, I encourage you to listen to the introduction episode to get an idea for what this podcast is about. Today's guest is Mr. Doug Mankoff, CEO of Echo Lake Entertainment.
Hi there.
Hello. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing good. So I'll just start with a quick introduction, just jump into the questions. So as a high school student, understanding the various professions and career paths we have available to us is a very daunting task because there are so many different choices available and because we have very limited exposure to these different paths ahead of us. So I'd like to take you back to your high school days when you were thinking about your college, your career. And I'm assuming that you were probably in a similar situation like me, with a bit of confusion and uncertainty in choosing the right path. And after a few years, you have a successful career in business today. And I'm sure you learned a lot during this journey, so I'm just trying to garner that information from you.
That's a great question. I did not have any, I had very little idea of what I wanted to do when I was graduating from St. Mark's. I knew very little about the business world, but I thought maybe business would be kind of interesting. So that's kind of all I knew. When I left St. Mark's and went off to Duke to pursue liberal arts. So I my mom had encouraged me, study liberal arts and you can keep a very open mind, learn more about what's out there in the world, and then you'll find your way. And she was right.
So what were the different factors that you considered in choosing your particular college?
Well, one, it was a very good liberal arts school. And as I said, I realized a liberal arts education was probably the best way forward for me. I liked that it was in a different place. It was out of Texas and would bring people from all over the world, basically, and so would broaden my perspective. I'd say those were the most important things. Plus, it had a great campus, which I thought was very cool. I like that.
Could you talk a little bit about your journey from after college until where you are today?
Well, it was while I was in college. In fact, early in college, I realized that a lot of my interests were in the creative arts and might lend itself to a career in film or television because I liked photography. I liked acting. I like storytelling or literature, and I thought that maybe this would be a career to pursue that might combine all those things. And then I was fortunate that my father knew someone who was out in Hollywood, and so I went to work for him after my first year of college, and that was a great eye-opening experience. Do you want me to take it from there? Like what? So soon thereafter, I realized, yeah, that this is definitely something I want to pursue. I didn't know exactly what role I wanted to play in the film industry, but I wanted to be in it. So after I graduated from Duke, I went to NYU Film School, and I went straight there without any time in between, and very quickly realized that I was worried about my prospects in the world after, if I went through the full 3 to 4 year program at NYU and got my master's, I wasn't sure where that would get me. It was a program designed to help people become film directors. But when you look at the odds, and I looked at the odds of the people who went to NYU, which was a pretty high level school for film, maybe only one out of 15 or 20 were winding up with careers in as directors or even getting to direct a film out of grad school. And so you think about it, you go to law school, 90% of the people, if not higher, get to be lawyers if they want to be. But you go to film school and it's like the reverse of that. And so that was concerning. So after a year, I thought, you know, I'm going to leave because I don't want to play those odds. And I wasn't sure I wanted to be a director. I wasn't sure that was where I saw myself fitting in. So I wound up going and working in video production. I went back to Dallas. I started a company. Then I went to business school at Harvard. And because a friend of mine who I'd gone to St. Mark's with said, you know, sometimes MBAs wind up getting jobs in Hollywood at the studios. Maybe that's something that would be of interest. So I got my MBA and did wind up going to work on more the finance side and the producing side of things. And that's where my career started.
Did you mentioned that after doing NYU, like in your process at NYU film school, you were doubting whether you would like actually be able to pursue a career in that because you said only 15% or 10 or 15% actually became directors. Did you have any other doubts or hesitation at different points in your career?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a good question. You know, when I graduated from Harvard Business School and I got out to L.A., no one knew what to do with me. I was 31 years old and no one knew where I would fit in or how to hide. Like there were no jobs for me because I had run my own company. I had my MBA, so they weren't going to make me the assistant of a 26-year-old executive. And yet they weren't going to make me an executive because I didn't know how to do anything in Hollywood. I had no idea how things worked or how you put a project together. So that was a very difficult moment. Now, what happens is most people come out here during college at some point and they get an internship and they start to get an understanding of how things work and where they might fit in the industry. And those internships, they might do them 1 year or 1 or 2 summers, and those are very valuable. So doing those internships during your college career, I think, can add a lot and also makes it more likely that when you come out here after college, don't need to go to grad school necessarily, after college, you come out and you wind up getting a job as an assistant. And there's a huge workforce here of assistants from amazing colleges who are answering phones and reading scripts and scheduling their boss's day, but hopefully also learning through osmosis what the job is and how to succeed.
And I was talking to a film director / script writer earlier this week, and he was talking about how graduate school, like in film graduate school, wasn't really that much useful to him and that he could have just gotten the information by just, like, as you mentioned, going and actually working there, like through osmosis. Do you feel the same way, or is there some value, some added value that you see in film graduates?
I actually think there is some value to studying screenwriting, to studying story structure. I think that, and just doing it and making films. Now, I don't think you have to go to film school to do that. You can take classes, you can take classes online, you can take night school classes, you can do it in many different ways. There's a program out here called Writer's Bootcamp, where it's like in 30 days, they try to help you generate a screenplay. You know, there are many ways to do it, but I do think it's helpful to learn story structure, story analysis. I think that those who study that a little bit in college or find some classes in it or read books about it do better than those who just go by what they feel. Like, I think it's important to understand that, you know, this is typically a movie has a 3-act structure, and understanding where a particular story deviates from that, but still does well, is helpful. So I think I wouldn't fully dismiss the value of studying some of those subjects in a class.
Could you talk a little bit about how or what a typical day or week looks like for you?
Sure. So I run a company that does a number of different things. We represent writers, directors, and actors. So there's a division of my company called Echo Lake Management, and we have 20 managers in that side of the company, and we represent writers at all different levels. They might be people who have just gotten into a TV writer's room for the first time, or they might be people who are showrunners who are actually running that writer's room. We represent directors, both in features and in television, and we represent actors who work in both as well. I spend more of my time on the production side of the company. We used to do finance. We don't do a lot of film finance anymore, but we are still doing production for both television and film. We're producing a show right now called The Great. which is being shot in England, but I'm not the on-set producer because that would require me being there for like 7 or 8 months, which I don't particularly want to do because I have a family. And then the third thing we do is we acquire films for distribution on airlines around the world. So it sort of came out of our finance business, and it's basically a distribution business that we have as well. So I would say I spend a lot of my days have to do with personnel. We have 50 people in the company or the combined companies. And so a lot of it is, I might spend up to an hour a day dealing with personnel kind of issues, hiring, trying to get people to improve their performance, that sort of thing. So that kind of typical managing kind of stuff. I spend a good chunk of the day working on our projects, trying to advance our projects. So we develop a lot of different projects at the same time. So we might have 40 projects, TV and the film side, we're trying to move forward at all times. So as an example, there's a book we have called Montana 1948, which is, we got a draft on from the writer and it's trying to improve it. So coming up with notes for the writer to get it a little better. And then at some point we might get it out to agents to see if we can get an actor to be in it. So it's trying to put these projects together in a way that makes it more likely that they'll get picked up, like this show, The Great, got picked up 3 years ago. So that's a big part of the day. The other, I'd say some of that is in meetings, some of that is phone calls, trying to get people to get their actors to read a script. And some of that is receiving phone calls. It is some of that is receiving phone calls, you know, from people who want to submit projects, want us to take a look at something, maybe for a client of ours, or maybe for us to produce.
And earlier you were talking about you didn't want to go on site for The Great because you wanted to devote more time to family. What role has work-life balance played throughout your career from like the start of college or after college to now?
Well, it gets harder. Work-life balance really intensifies when you have kids. That's when all of a sudden travel becomes less fun because you realize you're leaving your partner with, you know, a big job, which is getting the kids to school, getting, you know, helping them deal with different issues, and you're not around. So that's really tough. So it was, so we made a movie years ago called The Joneses, and I was away on set the whole time, and it was very tough on my family. And after that, I said, you know what, I'm not going to do this for a while. Now my youngest is 16. I think I probably could go be on set for a while, but at the end of the day, I'm not sure I want to go and be on set for 8 months, unless it's something that's really, really special and dear to me. So I'm reluctant to go away for that long.
What sort of skills are the most important in your profession? And sort of as an offshoot of that question, in any sort of field, networking is very important, but what specific role does networking play as a part of your job?
I think that a lot of being good as a producer is having an opinion, trusting it, and being able to express it. And we've had projects in the past that I've liked and my colleagues haven't liked. And if they can really convince me that they're right and I'm wrong, I want to be able to listen. So you have to be open-minded. But generally, when I trust my gut and my opinion, I've done pretty well. And so part of it is I have to convince them or convince others to come along. And that's a good producer has opinions that he can trust, he or she can trust. Networking is very important. You need to be someone people want to call and want to do business with. I've made it a priority to do business honorably, to always be truthful and transparent, which is not the norm in Hollywood. So doing that has made it refreshing for people to work with me, both as employees and as colleagues. So I think that's been important. And also just being able to put projects together, you have to be able to go out there and get actors, and you got to be able to get directors. And that's, you know, that does come from people wanting to work with you. So you have to be, you know, you have to develop a reputation of being good and kind and fair.
This next question is sort of about the different ways you could be become a film producer or film, like own your own company that produces films. So as sort of a background, if you want to become like a doctor, there's a set path of like 10 years in med school, and then you can go and become or practice medicine. But with many of these professions, like your profession or business, for example, there's not really a clear set path as to how you can get to the same place. So could you talk about perhaps the different positions in your company, such as like your position and the writer or producer or stuff like that, and also about how you could reach the same place through different means?
So there are a number of different paths. A lot of people will go to work for an agency, one of the big agencies like CAA or WME, right out of college. And it's a tough environment, but you wind up getting to know a lot of people, a lot of networking. And sometimes those agents, once they become agents and develop some power, can move over to a company, become a manager, which allows them to produce, and then have some success running their company or producing that way. So the representation route is one way to go. Others will go the development production route. So they'll go work for a production company or a studio or to a Netflix, someplace like that, where they start out as an assistant. Then they're doing, in all these, by the way, you start out as an assistant, and then you wind up as a development executive, and you're doing notes on projects and then trying to bring in new projects. And then you wind up playing more of a producerial role in those companies. So that's a second route. Then there's another route, which is going to work for a studio or a place like Netflix and being more on the acquisition side. So instead of developing things you're going to make, you're going to acquire things that are already made or are at some level of production. So you're one of the people who goes to the Cannes Film Festival in Toronto and you wind up seeing a movie you like, and then you try to buy that movie. So that's an acquisitions person. Those people also can rise up in the studio or at Netflix and become a very important player, and can eventually move over and become a producer if they want. So those are three primary ways people do it. Then there's the creative way. In other words, you come up as a writer. And these days, writers have so much more power because of the streaming wars and the value of good television. So a television writer really becomes a producer, a showrunner, and probably the most important one, and can then build a company. So Shonda Rhimes is an example of that kind of person who's just a great writer, but also knows how to run a room of writers, knows how to run a show, and eventually can run a lot of different shows at once and becomes a real powerhouse in that way. So that route of coming up as a writer, that one doesn't require being an assistant. That one requires just being a really good writer at some point, and then finding your way into a writer's room, usually as an assistant writer, but not always. Sometimes coming in at a higher level, depending on what you've done.
You're talking a little bit about how you try to run your business in sort of an honorable way, and that's been refreshing for other people in the industry. What is your personal definition of success? In other words, like, what are the goals that you try to work towards on a daily basis?
You know, what I'm trying to build here is a company, and have been building a company with like-minded people who want to advance the careers of those we work with and to advance our own careers as well, and to get good things made, good, powerful stories out into the universe. That's the goal. In one way or another, we're trying to get good things made and good things out there. So, you know, what goes along with that? Well, obviously you need to make money to have your company continue to thrive and grow. And for me, it's about long-term, not short-term. It's all about building people's careers in the long-term, whether it be a manager here or some client that we represent or an executive who works on the production side. It's about long-term. It's finding people who can be successful in the long-term and who will want to stay and invest that success or reap the rewards of that success here at the company.
From a high schooler or person in college's perspective, if we approach an adult for advice on like what to pursue in your future, we usually hear the cliche statement, like, follow your passion. What is your opinion about this? And how important do you think passion is for a better career, and what better advice do you think you would give to someone in high school or college as to like finding what they want to pursue as a career?
Well, it's all about a balance, right? Because you can't just pursue your passion, even if it's going to run into a brick wall or there's no way to support yourself with it. I mean, if your passion is about skateboarding and you're not a very good skateboarder, or, you know that there's not much of a career in it, then, you know, it's probably not good to only pursue that passion. Also, a lot of times when people do that, they're pursuing the passion they know, and they don't yet know what's out there. So once you go to college and you realize there's this other thing, there are these other things out here, there's this type of science or political science or this sort of genre of literature I didn't know about, you know, like you don't know your passion. You may be passionate, but you have to be open to new passions. So I think that you don't want to kind of lock in too soon to something you're good at or that you like, to the exclusion of other things that could be out there in the world. So that's my first bit of advice on it. Second, you do have to balance with some practicality. You can't just say, oh my God, I'm all about acting, I'm going to be an actor. Actors, that's a profession that's usually ruled by passion. But how do you know if you're good? How do you know if the world wants you? How do you know if your look is the kind of look that's going to work in Hollywood? Just because you're passionate about it doesn't mean you're going to succeed at it. So at some point, you have to self-assess. You have to get some kind of perspective about your chances of success. And you have to imagine, is this what I want to do? Is this what I do? You know, am I willing to just let the passion rule and, you know, kind of to the exclusion of practicality? So I'm somebody who's a little more conservative, and I don't want to put lots of eggs in one basket if I'm not sure that that's, you know, a good basket. But some people do that, and some people are successful that way. It's not the advice I would necessarily give, because that's not the advice that I follow.
This is my penultimate question. So how has this profession changed during the last couple of decades, especially with the evolution of technology?
How has the industry changed, you said? Well, it's changed a great deal. Years ago, everybody thought the industry would change massively because of the high quality of low-cost equipment. Interestingly, that hasn't had the profound effect that everybody thought. I think what it did do is it made it more viable for local productions to happen all around the world. So as an example, there was a film called Yak in the Classroom that was Oscar nominated this last year. Did you see it?
I have not.
It's a great movie. And it was only, you know, I can't remember the country it was from. It was right by Nepal. Very small. Is it Bhutan? Very, very small country that had just not really been able to make movies in the past. Well, now they can. I mean, this guy basically hauled not a very big camera. He had a little crew. They went up to this little village. It was lit by candlelight to a large extent at night. It was not... they didn't have generators, and they made this great movie. So that is an exciting thing about technology and it becoming affordable. But it didn't change things as much as everybody thought. What it meant was there's more local productions in different languages, which is great. But it didn't change things in terms of the dynamic of making movies here. Still, the movies that we wind up seeing in the theaters are usually big blockbuster movies or movies that are made with studios. Occasionally with indies trying to look like their movie is a studio movie. And they usually cost a lot of money because the crew is so expensive and the unions are very strong. And so even if you have you're going to shoot it on your iPhone, you got to get a crew that's very expensive to help shoot it. So I think that the bigger change is sort of technology driven. It's really a Netflix effect. It's the streaming wars, that's changed everything. It's affected the film business in a great way because now it's, you know, what they've basically figured out is it's not movies that attract people to HBO Max or to Disney Plus or to Netflix. It's usually series. It's ongoing series. And it's having just a constant fare of that. So it's made independent, lower budget movies much harder to find their way because those aren't getting pre-bought by the Netflixes of the world. And those international companies that used to help fund them are not funding them as much for two reasons. One, they have the local production, as I just mentioned, from the lower cost of making things, but also because their pay television model from the past has really been damaged by the streaming. And so they're not able to come in and pre-buy or partially finance these independent movies that were doing so well 10 years ago. So that's the biggest change. That's why we're not in the film finance business anymore. We realized it's not a very good environment for that.
Do you have any final comments before we wrap up the interview?
No, other than those were excellent questions, really thoughtful. Are you thinking about a career in entertainment?
I haven't really decided, but based on the limited experience I have, I'm thinking of doing something in biology or biomedical engineering.
Cool. That's great.
I'm keeping my options open because there are many interesting industries out there that I really haven't exposed myself to.
That's good. I think that's a very good way to be. Keep those options open, learn more. And I mean, obviously go to a school that has those types of programs. Well, it was very nice to meet you. And
thank you so much for your time.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks to everyone who's listening for choosing to spend your valuable time with this podcast. I hope you found this useful. To get notified about future episodes, please subscribe or follow Pathfinder 101 on Spotify, SoundCloud, Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Also, please visit Pathfinder101.com for more career-related information not included in the podcast. If the blog or podcast added some value to you, please like and share it with your friends and colleagues. Thanks so much for your time, and have a great rest of your day.